Well, I got an invitation once. Barbie and I, we both got the invitation. It was to a wedding. And the invitation said it was informal. And you know what? I already knew that because I had discussed it at the couple's pre-marriage preparation because it was actually a wedding that I was going to do. And we'd sat down and we'd gotten ready for the wedding. And the wedding is going to be outside, she had said. It's in our friend's backyard, she said. You and Barbie should dress casually and relaxed, she said. And that sounded really good to me, since comfort is absolutely the only measurement that I have to determine what I should wear, okay? If it's comfortable, I'm good, okay? If it hugs me in places I don't want to be hugged, okay? Or makes me feel stiff and tortured and I can't get wait to get out of those clothes and back into my jeans or my shorts, well, it's just not worth it as far as I'm concerned. So comfortable, casual attire for the wedding sounded perfect. So on the day of the wedding, Barbie and I drove through the neighborhood and right from the start, things just didn't look right, okay? The house turned out to be nestled in the hills of Palos Verde Estates, which meant I was entering an entirely different universe from the one which I actually live in. Suddenly, I felt completely out of place and like I should apologize for my car because it was only a Dodge and it was 2 years old already. Okay. So we found the address and we parked in front of the house and I was dressed in khakis and a button-down shirt, and it was tucked in, okay, which for me borders on being overdressed anyway. Barbie was in a nice skirt, nice top, and I was just reaching for the door handle when I spotted a guy walking across the front yard, headed for the house, and he was dressed in this trendy suit that looked like it cost more than my whole wardrobe, which I'm absolutely sure it did because you can get my entire wardrobe for $12. And I looked at Barbie, and she looked at B, and both of us were glancing down at our totally inadequate clothes as this parade of people made their way to the backyard, each one dressed like they were walking the red carpet at the Oscars. So, this is what the 1% think is informal, I said. Now, there was no way we were going to get out of that car wearing what we were wearing. So we only had one choice. We had both brought along another set of backup clothes just in case. And they were going to at least bump our fashion level up to only a couple of steps below the caterers. Okay? So Barbie crawled into our tiny back seat while I stayed in the front, and we changed clothes. I tried to wrangle my legs out of my pants into new ones without throwing the stick shift into neutral and sending us coasting down the hill. Okay, Barbie hunched down between the seats, struggling to get into a different dress. I ended up honking the horn a couple of times. Every few seconds, I caught sight of one of Barbie's arms or legs flailing away in the rearview mirror. Okay. And the whole time I kept wondering, well, what would happen if someone approached the car too close? And the ceremony ended up being delayed because the pastor and his wife had been arrested for indecent exposure. Finally, we tumbled out of the car, okay, sporting a few wrinkles, making a few adjustments here and there, transformed from comfortable and casual to as close to formal and acceptable as I can get. And we sauntered up to the house, still feeling underdressed, performed the wedding, stayed just long enough for the cake, and then made our retreat so that I could get out of my clothes and hope that no one was the wiser. Now, the same thing happened to an unlucky guy in Jesus' story this morning, but with way more unfortunate results. As we close in on the end of the great big Jesus story that we've been working our way through since the beginning of this past fall, we've slowed down now for Lent, and we're looking at the parables that Jesus told during his final week between his entrance into Jerusalem on Sunday and his journey to the cross on Friday. And he told a whole lot of stories during that week. In fact, about a fifth of all the parables that he told during his whole 3 years of ministry, he actually told during these last few days. Many of them told in response to his adversaries and requiring his listeners to make some sort of choice. And in true Jesus fashion, today's parable is a really odd, disconcerting little story. Now, it begins recognizably enough. A king sends out an invitation to a feast in honor of the wedding of his son. And that's not really unlike royal weddings that we've seen in the recent past. And an invitation to that is always a hot ticket that anyone in their right mind would want. I mean, George and Amal Clooney are going to be there, right? It's the place to be seen. Get an invitation to that, and it means you are one of the world's elite. But this king's invitation is met with rejection. He's snubbed by everyone. So he sends out a second invitation. Only this time, he's going to try to jack up the enthusiasm, okay? He wants to let everybody know how awesome this is going to be. We got prime rib! But apparently, his potential guests are still unimpressed. They neglect the king's hospitality in favor of their own everyday concerns, their farm, their business, their whatever. And the rest, they mistreat and they kill the king's servants. I guess they really didn't want to go. Which, understandably, makes the king kind of upset. And so this is where things really go off the rails now. In retaliation, the king goes to war against his own people. Enraged by their actions, he unleashes an army. And just like that, the murderers are themselves murdered, and the city is a pile of smoldering ash. But wait, it's going to get more bizarre still. This king is determined to have his celebration anyway. He is going to have a party, and so this party is still on. Invitations go out again, this time to anyone. The A-list folks originally invited, they're not going to come. So bring in the B-list, which also includes the people on the C-list and the D-list and the F-list, most of whom are busy checking their Facebook, shopping at Walmart, or queued up at the food pantry. And they get the invitation and they're like, ah, cool, I must have won the lottery. And so they go, Jesus says, the good and the bad. Now, party's in full swing. King enters the banquet hall, moves among the guests, wandering around, notices that one of them is not dressed appropriately. Friend, he says, and a better translation of that might be, hey, pal. Hey, buddy. What you doing here without being dressed properly? And at that moment, I'm thinking the poor guy probably felt a lot like I did at the wedding that I was at. Well, I thought this was supposed to be casual, so that's the way I came. How did I know that I was supposed to be in Armani? When the guy has nothing to say for himself, the king orders him bound hand and foot and thrown out, not just out of the party, but into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Oh, my gosh. What do we do with this? Jesus seems to delight in telling some pretty bizarro stories. Okay? Now, the thing with this king is that he is going to have his party. He will not be denied. One way or another, his feast is going to take place, and it has nothing to do with the response of his guests and only and everything to do with his desire to throw a celebration. It's the one thing that holds constant all through this story. The king wants to have a rip-roaring good time. And in the end, anyone can come if they want to have a good time too. So, if you're one of the original people on the invitation list who just couldn't be bothered to show up, this story may sound like really, really bad news. But if you're one of the down-and-outers who did not deserve an invitation in the first place, this means lobster tails and champagne while you dance the night away for you when all you thought you'd be eating was a peanut butter sandwich while you watched another episode of House Hunters. With one story, Jesus turns the whole world upside down for his listeners, who, remember, are the Pharisees and the people who think they've got this whole religion thing down cold. Okay? The chosen people, the privileged, the powerful, the self-righteous, the religious, the outwardly pious people, none of those people are going to fill this king's banquet hall. Rather, God's banquet in the end is going to be filled with people who have been crippled by their sin, blinded by their shame, and made lame by their own guilt. So if that happens to be you, you're in luck. Because it means you're not excluded. No one is excluded. No one even has to show a reason why they should be let in. There's absolutely no indication in this story that anyone's record must be clean, that their lives have to be in order, that their spiritual biceps need to be sufficiently developed before they can get into the party. You can come grieving, you can come hurting, you can come broken, you can come hopeless, you can come confused. The only thing is just come. Everybody gets in who wants to be there. The only qualifying factor at all is that you want to be there and you accept the invitation. Now, the invitation is extended to you no matter whether you accept it or not. If you're not interested in coming, then don't come. You too were invited, but the king's not going to force you through the doors. But are you really trying to say that your farm or your business or one more bit of success or one more thimbleful of recognition or one more work advancement or one more busy priority or one more anything else is worth missing the party of the century, now the party of eternity? Because it's a party you can miss out on. It's possible, you know. But that's the freedom of the gospel. You can surely choose to miss out if you got something more important. But just as surely, you can also get in. But what about that troubling little twist at the end? That matter of that one guest who's not wearing a wedding robe? Maybe he just misunderstood. Maybe the invitation said informal, but his idea of informal and the king's were disastrously different. I mean, I've been there. Or maybe he was trying to play it both ways, you know? Attend the banquet, but not really fully participate. Cruise the buffet table, but refuse to fully join in. I mean, that happens, doesn't it? You show up at a party that you don't really want to be at, and you just hang out in the corner until you've been there long enough so that you can beat a retreat. You say yes to an invitation, but you kind of forget to follow through. It's a costume party, but you refuse to wear a costume because you just don't do that. We've all been there, right? That the fact that the man did not have a wedding garment on when everyone else did would suggest that he was trying to show up while refusing to fully join in. But then the king comes along and he calls him out. He says, "Hey, buddy, sorry. It doesn't work that way. In the end, you're either part of his party or you're not. You can't be part way in, because to be part way in is in effect to be all the way out." That's what the king is getting at. He's just telling the guy the truth. It's time to stop pretending. And that he's not fooled at all by the guy's own self-deception. And while that can maybe be frightening, it can also be freeing, because after a while, it's exhausting to pretend, isn't it? And it's unsatisfying to hold back all the time. And in the end, the one who loses out is the guy himself. But maybe that's grace too. Not only the invitation, which we don't deserve, but that the king cares enough to walk right up to us and tell us the truth. Say, "Take off your mask. Stop pretending. Doesn't work here." Because then we have a chance to wake up to real life. A guy by the name of Gus, he wasn't dressed properly either, but he was wearing all he had. He had dressed up as best he could to participate in something at which he never expected to be included. See, Gus was my dad's boyhood friend. And Gus had lost everything. His marriage had crumbled bit by bit until it sagged into a heap around his feet. His children had left him, telling him they really didn't want anything to do with him anymore. Gus's behavior had become notably strange over the years. He would go into tirades about hidden communists back when we worried about that kind of stuff. And he had designed and built his house with a bomb shelter filled with oddball pamphlets and MREs long before survivalism was even a thing yet. More and more, his friends were confused by his behavior as he pushed them further and further away until slowly they gave up on him, allowing him to withdraw into his lonely, distorted world. Now, my dad took us kids over to his house for visits long after everyone else had dropped him. But finally, all alone, Gus hit the road, drifting from place to place, sleeping in his car, working temporary jobs. It went on that way for years, and every now and then he'd kind of drift back through the cities to check his mail. When Barbie and I decided to get married, we invited Gus to the wedding. He got in touch with us. He wasn't sure if he should come. All he had to wear were some filthy jeans and a tattered flannel shirt. He was a bum, he said, and we wouldn't want him there. But we did want him there, we said. It was important to us that he'd join us on such a meaningful day in our lives. But we didn't expect him to show. On the night of our wedding, as we stood in the receiving line near the end, came a rumpled, funny-looking guy wearing a too big suit that looked like it had been picked out of the pile of clothes that Goodwill turns down. It was Gus. "Thanks for coming," I said. He grasped my hand, and with an emotion I wasn't prepared for, he leaned in and he whispered, "Thanks for asking. I wasn't going to come. I didn't think I belonged, but your invitation, it's like it brought me back to life." Interestingly enough, just a week or two ago, Barbie was going through some stuff in our house. She came across this letter that Gus wrote to us the very next day. I want to share a couple lines with you. He writes, "This is an unusual situation for me, so bear with me as I attempt to unfold an emotional mixture of congratulations, thanks in sincere gratitude, and desire to express a heart swollen with a confusing feeling of undeserving joy and happiness. It's my desire at this moment to thank you all for inviting me to this occasion. The whole evening was so much of an emotional happiness for me that I am unable to express it, to see and talk with all of these old friends. I had truly forgotten that I would or might be welcomed in such a manner. I know that I owe a lot to you for this acceptance that I experienced tonight. I'm grateful for the wonderful experience. Tonight, my heart was experiencing an input of happiness while it took opportunity to unload a few frustrated burdens it had carried for many years. All that, plus the just plain good time that I felt a part of." That's what God's invitation to his party does for us. Brings us back to life. The King invites you, though you do not belong. He wants you, though you've given him no reason to. You come empty and he fills you. He has an entire banquet ready, and you know what? The hors d'oeuvres are about to be served at this very table this morning. You are acceptable at his party because he has said it is so. So please, Don't miss out because you are so focused on something that in the end simply will not matter. But also come prepared to fully participate. Because it's the only party around that has the power to bring you back to life. Let's pray. Gracious God, it's a simple prayer. Thank you, Jesus, for the invitation. Amen.